Now, a group of conservative leaders look at immigration policy, how immigration reform fits into the conservative political agenda, and consider a new poll on public attitudes toward immigration. This forum, hosted by the Manhattan Institute, is just over an hour.
Okay, everyone, we'd like to get started. Welcome. On behalf of the Manhattan Institute and Americans for Tax Reform, this is the first in a series. It's going to be an occasional series. We can't predict the next one, but when we'll have the next one, but the first in a series of Hill briefings. The idea is for Republican staffers, particularly House staffers. Some of what we have to tell you here today is going to be so interesting that we decided to open it up to the Senate. But the idea of this group going forward is going to be Republican House staffers interested in immigration issues. So we're really glad you could all be here. I'm the moderator. I'm Tamar Jacoby. I'm a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. And I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to set the stage for you. Because make no mistake, President Bush hasn't really gone out on the hustings or on the war path on this yet. But President Bush has changed the landscape on this issue, has changed the way we all think and talk about it. And I just want to take a minute to set that stage for you. We used to think of immigration issues as an either or. There were people on one side who thought that the answer was close the borders, and there were people on the other side who thought that the answer was open the borders. There were people who thought the answer was high immigration, and there were people who thought the answer was low numbers of immigrants. Well, President Bush has blown that old dichotomy out of the water. President Bush and some others that share the same idea. And the way he's done this is that he's said, there are two simple ideas at the heart of this debate. One is that immigration is good for the country. Immigration helps economic growth. Immigration brings vitality to the country. The other proposition is that illegality is bad for the country. People coming across the border without background checks, people ignoring the rule of law, the lawlessness that's spreading in our communities, that's bad. Immigration good, illegality bad. But what the president has said is that actually we can have one without the other. We're not doomed to getting that illegality when we get the immigrants. This is a radical idea. If we just, create legal channels for people who are now coming illegally, we can have the good without the bad. We can have the immigration without the illegality. We can meet our labor needs. We can be true to our tradition as a nation of immigrants, but we can also end the illegality, get control of our borders, and enhance our security. In fact, the president has said, the only way we can get control of the borders and enhance our security is by recognizing the reality of the immigrant flow and creating legal channels for it. If we create those legal channels, we can get the benefit of the immigrants, we can have our economy growing, we can manage the flow in our interest. So that's Bush's challenge. That's what he's put on the table. That's how he's changed the landscape. Now, of course, just because the president has said it so doesn't mean that everybody agrees. And that's led to the debate that we're having in the country today. That's why we're here. As we all know, our party is split. Republicans are split on the issue. Voters are uncertain. There are a welter of bills floating around on the Hill, some accepting the president's principles, others not accepting the principles. But what we're here to talk about today is not so much the substance of any of those bills, but rather the politics. The question that we're posing to our panelists is, how is politics arranging itself around this in this new landscape that the president has created? Does this new idea fit in to the old liberal-conservative divide, into the old Republican-Democratic divide? And if it does, how? And how do those politics split? That's question number one. And question number two, what do voters think? So we have a very distinguished group of speakers to speak to that. I'll introduce them all now in the order that they're going to speak, and then I'll just let them take over. They don't really need any introduction, I don't think, in this room, but just in case you're from Mars. Grover Norquist, leading conservative strategist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Maybe the most important thing about him this week, newly married. Ed Goaz, president and CEO of the Terrence Group, really the leading, the pollster that has set the gold standard for political polling in our time. His own polling, but also the bipartisan polls that he does with Celinda Lake, the battleground surveys. And John Gay, from the International Franchise Association, and co-chairman of the leading business group that advocates reform of the kind the president has been talking about, the Essential Worker Immigration Coalition. With no further ado, I'm going to turn the floor over to our panelists. Grover Norquist first.
Thank you. I believe that the politics and the economics of immigration are moving, as Tamar Jacoby said, to where we will pass something very close to what the president has put forward before the 2006 election. Now, the politics of immigration has always been somewhat problematic. I remember Yakov Smirnov speaking, the fellow who escaped from Russia and fled to the United States during the Cold War, comedian, speaking at University of Michigan, and he was giving his list of jokes, all of which about how awful it was in the Soviet Union and how wonderful, if a little bewildering, it was in the United States. And the students who are used to having their student fees to pay for people who came to trash the United States got tired of this and asked, well, isn't there something about the United States you don't like? And he thought for a minute and he said, yeah, those goddamn immigrants that come and steal our jobs. And so there has been this tension. We all recognize that the immigrants who came here 50 years ago and 100 years ago were a tremendous asset to the country, and we would consider it insupportable to suggest that there ought to be fewer of fill in the blank. And yet people feel somewhat free to talk about the guys who are arriving this week in ways that they would never talk about the people whose grandparents had arrived. And so there's some challenges there. This really came home to me when I was at a meeting at the Republican National Committee with the leaders of all the business associations, sort of an annual meeting with the head of the RNC, and everyone got up and talked about, oh, the most important thing to us is tax cuts or tort reform, and they went around the room. And as the chairman was leaving, this is in 2000, it was like the second to the last scene in those Columbo movies, one of the leading businessmen said, well, there is this one other thing. And they turned around and came back in, what's that? He said, well, we're running out of workers. And if the economy continues to grow, we're in real trouble. And they went around the room, and the truckers and the retailers and the restaurateurs and the Chamber of Commerce and the manufacturers all agreed that we were heading into very serious labor shortages and that we ought to do something about immigration, but that the business community sort of had never done that before. It's like engaging on the abortion debate at, you know, with the Chamber of Commerce. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether it's like okay to do this. And you saw this shift from neutrality and bewilderment to strong support for reforming immigration so that the United States economy can grow and we can have more workers. The labor unions, which used to be some of the bitterest foes of immigrants and immigration, have in most cases gone to at least neutrality and in some become much strong advocates of reform. The Republican Party is the now dominant party in the House and Senate and the presidency and in state legislatures and governors looks ahead to 25 years of dominance given the growth of the investor class, the number of self-employed people, demographic shift that's bringing in more Republicans into the country. There's one big question mark, and that is how the Republican Party will treat new Americans coming in, the immigrants. Will they make them part of a growing Republican majority, or will they do what the Republican Party did in 1884? Everybody here has this quotation. This is where the expression rum, Romanism, and rebellion comes from. It was stated by a fellow named Dr. Burchard, who in 1884 was speaking to the Religious Bureau of the Republican National Committee. We may not have been aware they had a religious bureau. They did. My guess is, given this quotation, there weren't a lot of Catholics in the religious bureau of the Republican National Committee, because he said, "We are Republicans and do not propose to leave our party and identify ourselves with the party whose antecedents have been Romanism and rebellion." And for 100 years, the Republican Party lost the Catholic vote in the United States, a vote that now is increasingly Republican, but for 100 years pushed it away because of an insult driven by a guy who had never been elected to anything. Okay, it's not the President of the United States or the head of the Republican Party that made this stupid comment and made people feel unwelcome. If you insult people, they will come to the sense that you do not like them and do not want them. That may be difficult for some people to pick up on, but I believe it is the central truth about whether the Republican Party grows as the natural governing majority in this country or whether it ceases to be the national governing majority. Tamar mentioned that security is very important here. If we're going to, that we need to reform immigration to have reasonable immigration laws that allow enough immigrants to come to this country legally and in a reasonable manner so that we know who people are and that and they know that they're secure and safe here and don't have to fear the police as they may have in their previous country of origin. We saw this during the Maryland sniper case where the police had to go around and say to people, if you have any information about these snipers, we won't be asking you any stupid questions about where you were born. With the recognition that if, because we've set an unrealistic immigration set of quotas that are in effect 25-mile-an-hour speed limits on our 75-mile-an-hour highways. And then people say, oh, I'm not against speeding. I'm just against illegal speeding. Well, at a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, most of your driving is going to be illegal driving, okay? And if you set up irrationally low immigration numbers, most of your immigration is going to be illegal. And it is really intellectually dishonest of the people who really don't want immigrants, but then masquerade behind saying, oh, I just don't want illegal immigrants, and wish to pass laws to make all or most of them illegal. Our goal is to have a reasonable and rational flow of immigration to this country that is legal and protected, both them and the United States protected, where we know who's coming across the borders and bad guys aren't slipping in. But you do not want what we have now, which is a large number of people in this country who are not documented, who are not here legally, who if the police come by and say, anybody got any information on terrorists, their answer is, I don't really want to talk to you because I really don't want you asking about my Social Security number or my ID card. And therefore, we have created a problem that damages our country's security and that can be fixed with reforms similar to those the Republican president has put forward. Next, until we reform immigration, we are unlikely to reform education or welfare. There was a great speech by an anti-immigrant spokesman who was born in another country, who was giving this big, long speech about immigrants come to this country, they go on welfare, they become Democrats, this is bad.
Okay.
And I came up to him, I said, well, you gave a very interesting speech against the present welfare system. This is 15 years ago. But you didn't give a speech against immigrants. Welfare does the same thing to people who are born in this country. Makes them dependent, turns them into Democrats. This is a problem for the country and the republic and the world. And we need to reform welfare. And this fellow said, well, you're probably right, but we can't reform welfare. That's not doable. But we could get together with the labor unions and beat up on immigrants, and that would at least reduce the problem created by welfare, and that's what we ought to do. And I said to him, if you take that attitude, we'll never reform welfare. And one of the challenges we have is that talk show hosts look at a welfare problem and look at a failed education system run by the National Education Association and say, oh, that's a problem created by immigrants. No, that is a problem created here in the United States by our welfare laws and by our problematic primary and secondary education system and how they're being run. And those problems damage immigrants to the United States, but they do more damage to people who are born here because they play with larger numbers. rationalizing our immigration thing, I believe, will help us focus on the reforms we need to make in education, because education is not just to assimilate people who come here from other countries, it's to assimilate four-year-olds who have a very poor understanding of who George Washington was or how many people are in the House and the Senate and so on. And four-year-olds born here know as little about that as four-year-olds born overseas. And lastly, on the politics of this, we must never be fooled by the difference between preference and intensity. If you ask people some questions on gun control, you can often get them to say, oh, many people want gun control. But on election day, the only people who remember that question are the members of the National Rifle Association and their siblings, and they hate gun control. And so people can think that they're playing to large numbers and find out that, in fact, the only people they've motivated are the people who disagree with them. We see that, I believe, in the numbers on immigration, where Pat Buchanan in the year 2000 looked at the polling data and said 70% of Americans think there are too many immigrants and we should have less. Therefore, I will be the candidate against immigration, and I'll get 70% of the Republican primary vote, and then I get to be president. This plan didn't work, and we, in fact, nominated and elected one of the most pro-immigrant presidents since Ronald Reagan. And that is because, while some people make a lot of noise on immigration, the vote moving on the issue actually sides with the people who want a rational, pro-immigrant, pro-assimilation policy in this country. And understanding that makes it a lot easier for those elected officials who can, if you hear the chatter on radio talk shows, believe that they're hearing. It's like the three bullfrogs in the pond at night. You'd think there are thousands of them, but there are only three, but they make a lot of noise. And they don't even, at the end of the day, those bullfrogs don't even vote on the immigration issue. People who have come here a while ago or have parents who have come, or children, parents who have come here, they do understand that when some people talk about being anti-immigrant, it means they don't like you. And that tends to, over a 100-year period, affect people's voting behavior.
Well, I always hate going after Grover because he has such a interesting way of presenting things, and certainly can get people smiling along with the hard facts. I'm actually been asked to do something fairly impossible for a political pollster, and that is to go over the data of a recent poll that we released, and I will try to run through it as quickly as I can and stay within the 12, 15 minutes that they had asked me to do this. Two things I'd say first that I always find interesting about Washington. One is that there seems to be a lack of understanding at the stages a problem goes through, and problems go through four stages. You talk about the problem, you talk about solutions, you implement solutions, and that creates a whole new set of problems. It's an endless cycle. And I think very often in dealing with problems, we get bogged down in either talking about the problem as opposed to solutions, or sometimes we forget that the problems we're trying to fix are actually created by our solutions. And so there has to be a little bit of thinking forward. The other is, I think, a problem with the intelligentsia. And we have an intelligentsia on the right and an intelligentsia on the left. Certainly the news media thinks all of themselves as being the intelligentsia. But there is this belief that if I give you the same information I have, you will come to the same conclusions that I have come to. And if you haven't, then you're stupid. And I think very often we see with the Democrats them applying that rule to things that we look at very often, the same information, and come to the same conclusion. Or come to a different conclusion because we're stupid. We've seen that applied to several of our Republican presidents over the last couple of decades. And it's all driven by this kind of elitism that is there in the Democratic Party. But I also will say there's one other thing I know from polling. And that is that voters can hold contradictory opinions. And that does not necessarily mean they are contradictory. And it does mean that probably all those things factor in when looking at that. For example, we asked some qualities of immigrants. And by 84 to 11, the American public agrees that immigrants are hardworking. By 69 to 14, they have good family values. By 76 to 21, they work at jobs that other Americans don't want. By 59 to 33, they reject the fact that illegal immigrants are a threat to our national security. But there are some other things you look at. Oh, also 59 to 31, they believe that immigrants are law-abiding. By 47 to 40, they question in a negative way, are they loyal to America? By 51 to 47, they say they are taking American jobs after they just said that they're taking jobs that Americans don't want. By 52 to 41, they think that they're here illegally as a mass of immigration. And by 47 to 46, kind of a split, they think they don't want to learn English. And so there are all these kind of factors on the immigration issue. What our job was in this particular survey was to do really two things. One is to look at the immigration issue on what looks like will be a proposal for a guest workers program and look at the specifics of that and see where the American public is on that. Then to take positive and negative messages from both sides. And by the way, there's groups out there talking about push polling. There is a vernacular in polling called push questions. We've used it for years and years. It is not the more recent push polling negative connotation. Push questions means you are giving more information to that respondent, or assuming you're giving more information to that respondent than what they have before you ask the question. And so you're assuming that you are dealing within a vacuum. And so in this survey, we gave them some positive messages from the pro-immigration side, and from my perspective, negative questions from the anti-immigration side, and then came back and asked the strict, here's the proposal, what do you think, to see if giving that information, those arguments, changed anyone in terms of their opinion on the data. And it is the way we do every campaign. It is the way we approach campaigning. And quite frankly, if you're on one side, one of the things you want to make sure you're doing is truly testing the harshest arguments on the other side. You don't want to sugarcoat it to get a certain response. You want to know what you're dealing with. And so we really went in there and looked at the harshest arguments that were there. However, we first went and looked at the data. Now, putting it in context, there are two issues. We saw a massive change, and again, contradictory, after September 11th. One is our economy was in trouble after September 11th, and so there is always a certain pushback on immigration when you're in bad economic times. The other was the security issue that really popped up as a major problem in terms of dealing with immigration. Now, contrary to that, you also had Americans saying, well, wait a minute. I want to be open. I want to be generous. I want to be very, very pro people coming and looking at this country because I want to prove the terrorists are wrong on what they were saying about this country. And so there was this kind of back and forth struggle with the voters, but it was very difficult to move forward a pro-immigration policy because you had bad economic times and a focus on security. One of the things we see in this data is that we've seen it in some other polling, is we're beginning to see a shift finally on the economy from a Republican standpoint. We've seen a 14-point shift from people saying, a net 27 points, saying the economy is just fair or poor to saying the economy is good or excellent just in the last 2 years. And so one of the things we see in this data for the first time is the economic pressures have lessened on the immigration issue, putting that much more focus on the security issues. Other context, strategic context we see, voters overwhelmingly believe that the immigration system is broken. We are now beyond that stage of problem solving that we're talking about the problem. Everyone agrees it's a problem. Everyone agrees it's broken. Everyone agrees something has to happen. So we're kind of moving to the next stage. Second is the vast majority, and we asked this, I think, in a very clear way, but it is a very important point. The overwhelming majority, 80% of the voters, I believe, are very high, believe that deporting of the 10 million undocumented or illegal, whichever term you want to use, immigrants in this country, it is unrealistic to believe we're going to deport those people. And so they are very open to talking about proposals and listening to proposals that will say, okay, they're here. We're not going to grab them all up and round them all up and send them back home. So how are we going to deal with this? The other is that 8 in 10 believe that if the immigrant in this country is here, working, paying taxes, learning English, that there should be a way to become a citizen. And that is very much a focus of the voters, which is kind of on the tail end of the proposal. Now, some of the strategic points on the proposal. First of all, 3/4 of Americans support a comprehensive bipartisan immigration reform proposal that combines toughness, fairness, a guest worker program, family reunification, which is a major issue in the hearts of Americans, a path to legal residency for undocumented immigrants who are already here. Support for this proposal is solid across party, regional, and demographic lines. Voters support each component of the proposal as well as the overall package, and we tested each one individually, and I'll go through that with you. And the proposal holds firm after voters hear both positive and negative. In fact, the overall numbers are a net 53 points for the proposal after you run through the positive and negative measures, both of which get majority agreement from the voters when you walk through the, do you agree with this negative statement or do you agree with this positive statement, except for a couple. And then you come back and it's a net 57 points in favor of the proposal, which when you're doing policy development is always something you're looking for. Voters do not base their support on for political candidates. We asked a very direct question, are you a single issue voter on the immigration issue? Will you vote for or against a candidate without hearing about the proposal? Will you vote for or against a candidate just based on their position disagreeing with you on immigration? And that's not a surprise because normally what we see on any issue is about 15% on both ends of the spectrum that will vote against or for a candidate based on agreeing with that one policy. It's also somewhat a neutralizing position. And over 2/3 of the voters say that they would be more likely to vote for a candidate who supports some type of immigration policy. Now, we did ask most important problem, and we gave them a list. Immigration did score, as Grover kind of alluded to, fairly low to the bottom. 22% said the economy and jobs, 12% retirement and Social Security, 10% each for education and terrorism. Iraq, 9%, healthcare was 8%, moral values, 9%, taxes at 3%, crime and drugs at 3%, and immigration was at 5%. So only 5% of the electorate said, given this list of issues, this is the most important issue. Now, you probably get a different response from some of the panelists up here. We also asked a question that we've been asking for some time, which is an interesting question. Do you want immigration in this country kept at the current level, increased, decreased, or stopped altogether? One of the things we have seen as a nuance of this question is that people that say kept at the current level are factoring in their belief that there's this immigration. Again, remember, over a majority of people are saying that immigrants in this country are illegal. And so they're factoring that in. So you have 39% said keep at this level, 9% increased, 31% decreased, and 15% stopped altogether. And now probably the two extremes are the increased and the stopped altogether. And I think where the real debate is between those that are saying decreased and those that are saying keep at the current level, which is incorporating undocumented immigrants. The question on would you vote for a candidate or against a candidate based on disagreeing with their position, it was 64% would vote for. 30% would vote against a candidate that differed with their position. Now, we tested basically five positions in this proposal, that is part of the proposal. And I won't go back and read through each one again on reading the overall. The first one was require undocumented workers living in the U.S. to come forward and register as temporary guest workers. By 80-16, voters agree with that position. Provide temporary work for visas, work visas for seasonal and temporary workers not currently in the country. A little bit different position, it drops to 65-33, but it's still a 2-to-1 margin. Provide these newly registered workers with a multi-year process for legal residency and eventual citizenship. 62% would favor, 34% oppose. Again, still in that 2-to-1 range. Not as high as the guest worker concept overall. Provide these workers with no preferential treatment for citizenship over legal immigrants. They agree with that 61-to-34. So if you're going to have this program, you have to assure in the program it's not going to give preferential treatment just because they were here for longer over people going through the legal system. Provide tougher penalties for those who violate these laws once they're in place. That gets close to the guest workers. It's 84-to-13. And put a priority of reuniting close family members, 67-to-24. Again, that plays to the heart of Americans of what's right versus the other more technical parts of this provision. Now, when we presented that to the voters, again, no push questions in terms of positive messages or negative messages, just here is the proposal. The result was 75-to-22 approve of this proposal with all those component parts. And on intensity, it's 38-to-13. So it's at that same 3-to-1 margin. Interestingly enough, no party differential on that. Actually, it's a little bit better with Republicans and Independents, 78% of Republicans, 77% of Independents. And for Democrats, it drops down to 70-25 approved. You do have in the African American community some negative pushback in terms of immigration that affects the Democrats overall. Red states, blue states, purple states, I'm sure you all know by now what those states are and what they mean. Red states, 77% approve. The blue states, 79% approve. The purple states, 72% approve. White, African American, and Hispanic. 78% of whites approve of the proposal. 70% of Hispanics, actually more whites than Hispanics, although the negatives are not higher. There's more unsure on the Hispanics. And with African Americans, 67-to-31. Again, a little bit over 2-to-1. Union, non-union households, no difference. 73% union households, 75% non-union households support, and over 70% of urban, suburban, and rural voters all support the proposal. Interesting, we also went back to that 30% that said they would vote for or against a candidate based on disagreeing with my position on immigration. Within that 30%, support for the proposal is 65% approve, 32% disapprove. So, and there is this thing in politics, I've always kind of loved it, that it's easier to scream with alarm than point with pride. I think one of the things we as Republicans have to understand here is just because we hear more people screaming with alarm, that doesn't mean they are the majority. And we see that in the data, that they are not the majority in terms of pointing their finger at this. Now, we asked them, of these proposals, what makes you for the proposal of those people that said they were for it? Number one at 27% was registration of undocumented workers. Number two was tougher penalties and reinforcement once this is in place. And that was at 13%, less than half, but it is the number two. You then had family reunification at 10% and at 9%, both temporary visas for seasonal workers from outside the country and the citizenship issue. And then no preferential treatment for illegal immigrants at 7%. What is interesting in that versus those that are against the proposal is they're much more diffuse on those against the proposal, which is going to make it harder for the anti-side to fight against it because there's no one thing that sticks out the way the workers' visa does. It's 13% down to 9% with no one really kind of sticking out. We then came back and asked a separate question about candidacy. And that is, would you be more likely or less likely to vote for this proposal based on a candidate being in favor of this proposal? And the result was 69-to-21 for that. Interestingly enough, for Republicans, it was 74-to-28 more likely to vote for a candidate. For independent voters, 72-to-17 more likely to vote for a candidate. And with Democrats, it was 63-to-24. So it was almost 10 points lower. Without going into the positives and negatives, I'll kind of leave that for before. I told you it would be hard to go through all this data. I will say that whether you're looking at a temporary worker's visa or you're looking at eventually citizenship, There are four items that we looked at. We asked how important are these items in terms of you being in favor of this proposal. Very, very important. And very little difference between whether it was just for a worker's permit or for immigration, which is citizenship, which is rather interesting. Those are paying taxes, 95%. No criminal record, 95%. Working, 94%. And learning English, 94%. When you move to citizenship, it's 96 for taxes, 97 for no criminal record, 94 for working, 96 for learning English. So those are key component points in terms of what the American public is looking for from the immigrants in terms of being in favor of it. And again, when we went back and asked the proposal at the end, after doing the various positive and negative messages, it was 77% agree with the proposal, and the disagree dropped to 20%. And you had very little kind of movement inside. You had 10% shift to favor, 7% shift to being opposed, but it was not along party lines. It was more internal, somewhat along racial lines in looking at that data.
Well, thank you both so much. I don't know, you guys are a very low-key audience. I mean, where are the gasps? 75% of the public in favor of an immigration reform that's liberalizing and allowing people who are coming illegally to come legally? I mean, gasp, really. the numbers don't usually look like that. I don't know what kind of polls you're used to seeing. But thank you both so much. What we'd like to do now is open to questions, and John gets the first question because he's been sitting here so quietly and patiently. No, seriously, like to open it to questions. Please say who you are and who you work for. And this is C-SPAN, in case you wonder who's shooting you. Someone must have a break the ice question. Please. Tell us who you are.
I'm now the writers. With the polls and statistics you're talking about, have you considered using a silent majority type of message that you think could resonate with people?
It's an interesting question. Do you want to speak to that?
Can you be more specific? I'm not quite sure what.
Well, you mentioned, and I'm very aware of very vocal opponents of immigration that are being heard, and obviously they're not showing up in the numbers that you're bringing forth. Do you have strategies as far as countering that? What have you all been thinking?
I'm not necessarily part of the strategy team. I guess I would respond to that more from a polling standpoint and looking at the data. And that is, I think the most important part is that we are moving from that talking about the problem to talking about solutions. And so when you get those solutions on the table and start discussing those solutions, what happens is that those screaming with alarm are somewhat dampened by those that are looking at all the various proposals that are out there. And I think the important point here is that those screaming with alarm are not saturating the kind of debate on where the debate is right now, that the voters are very clearly saying there's a problem, it's broken, it needs to be fixed. They're very clearly reasonable on believing that you have to deal with the 10 million illegal aliens or undocumented immigrants that are here and deal with what are you going to do, because the answer isn't pack them up and send them back home. And I think as long as you have those two in political context to talk about the solutions, I think the more you have people out there screaming, the less they're going to be heard.
But it's an interesting metaphor on the silent majority, that the silent majority is for this, that the people who are against are the screamers and the silent majority is for. Anybody else want to touch that? No. Another question? Please.
Talk a little bit about the people that you surveyed regionally, if you did it across the country, age range, just a few statistics on that.
One of the things Linda and I are proud about, I don't know if you followed the battleground, but we've been the most correct in three of the last four presidential elections. We got it wrong with everybody else in 2000, but we're only a tenth of a percent off in predicting the last election. And we take a great deal of effort to look at it. What we looked at here was 800 likely voters. We did do an oversample of Hispanics to work back in, but what you do is you case weight that back in, so you may be looking at the 9%, which you've also added in there the extra 200, but it doesn't affect your other numbers. We weighted this data, as we always do, in looking at likely voters to the results of the last election. And the last election was basically parity between the two parties, was women at 53%, and was, in terms of a racial quota, 11% African-American, 9% Hispanic, 4%, which is a combination of other and Asian, and then the rest were white. And that's it. So we are looking at a sample of likely voters. Error, margin of error, I should have mentioned this, is 3.5%. Regionally, we're not a large enough sample to be looking at regionally. We could look in the southwest, for example. I think what we know is more anecdotally. For all the discussion of the problems that may be there in that region, you look at your member, you look at Congressman Flake, you look at some of the others that have been very pro-immigration in the heart of that region, and yet they got reelected in Republican primaries by huge margins, even though there was this, you know, scream from the other side that we're going to get you. And I think that, you know, one of the things we know on the immigration issue is there has not been one person on either side of the aisle yet that has been defeated or won an election based on the immigration issue and having either the right position or the wrong position.
Ed, can people get copies of the summary of the poll somewhere, or how does that work?
I think at the Immigration Forum, but for the Republicans, you know the Terrence Group. Our website is Terrence, TARRANCE.com. I'll make sure the whole survey is put up on the website by this afternoon.
Those numbers went by pretty fast. And do we need you to get to people before they ask their question? and.
Emily Heil with Congress Daily. I have a question about how this, and probably not for the pollster, but how this might move through the Congress. How should or could Republican leaders deal with this given the screamers in their ranks?
I'm assuming a Senate first strategy. There are a couple of thoughts. There's the do it all together. There's the rifle shot effort of, you know, what about doing agriculture first? What about doing H-1B visas separately? I tend to believe that the strength is there to do a broad reform. What President Bush wanted to do in the fall of 2001, and I was actually at meetings at the White House before September 11th, where we believed we were going to roll that out in for Mexico only in the fall of 2001, and that we were all set to go. And the guys from Guatemala were going, hey, wait a minute, how come we're just doing Mexico? And I thought, look, since Mexican-Americans, it was the largest, solve that one and then use that as the model to do the rest of the world. I think we're now past that to doing a more inclusive piece of legislation. In retrospect, I wish that we had moved then. I wish we had moved in the fall of 2001. I wish we had simply explained then what needs to be explained now. This is part of making the country more secure against acts of terror or terrorist individuals who wish us harm. That this is part of that. It's not aside from it. It's not different. It's not something that makes it more difficult. It is, in fact, a necessary part of a more secure homeland. As well as being good for economics and everything else. So I think we'll look for the large picture, and then the question is, are there some Republicans that you lose, but then there are other Democrats in the House in particular that you'd pick up? I believe the votes are there once we make the decision to do it on timetable. Every month you go by, the labor market tightens, and so the argument that some people go, oh, well, they're going to take jobs, as the unemployment number continues to decline, as we end up with more and more labor shortages in more and more industries, it becomes a little harder for people with a straight face to suggest that this would lead to unemployment when you're talking about rationalizing what's already in existence. So I tend to think we're on track. There are arguments for moving faster, and there are arguments for, you know, waiting another month or two and let the labor markets tighten. Clever people in the House and Senate will be making those decisions. But I believe as time goes forward, the case for it gets stronger, not weaker, and the case against becomes more difficult to make.
Sorry, could I add on the security issue? Part of, as we're seeing the pressures on the economic impact of immigration kind of lower in terms of a growing economy and these tightening of the market. The other thing that has really surfaced amongst the voters is kind of a common belief that part of what makes so much sense on a guest workers program is, from a security standpoint, it's better to know, have these people come forward and know who they are and where they are. That allows us actually to make our country more secure, as opposed to kind of looking the other way at this point and ignoring the 10 million that are out there.
Let me just add on the strategy. I think that it is a Senate first strategy. Senators McCain and Kennedy are working on a bill that may come out in a matter of weeks. Senator Cornyn is looking at this, the chair of the Immigration Subcommittee. You could very well see ag jobs, the agricultural program, come through first. That would be fine. It's a good model for what has to happen with the broader economy. But it does, the ag jobs bill only affects a relatively small percentage when you're talking about 10 million people who are undocumented in this country and 300,000 or 400,000 more coming each year. I think an important point on timing is that for something as controversial as immigration reform to move, it's going to require the full weight of the president and the administration to get behind it for a big push on a bipartisan bill. And we do know that the president is focused on Social Security at this moment. It has been very clear with those of us who are supporting immigration reform that that the president will be weighing in time on this.
Two things I would actually add to the to these answers. I think there's a consensus out there that this is going to have to be bipartisan. I mean, somebody may confound me with a vote count that goes against everything I think most of us up here think, but I think most of us would agree this is not going to be a Republican-only piece of legislation. So, you know, obviously complicated in this era and, you know, affects the strategies. The other thing I would say about the timing is there is a reason to the Grover talked very eloquently about the reasons to wait, but there's also a reason to go sooner rather than later, because, you know, if House members are voting on this before they take off to start campaigning to get reelected, that's obviously going to, despite the good news in the poll, make some people nervous. So, I mean, that's the pressure to have it start sooner rather than waiting too long. Let's give someone else a chance.
Hi, Mark Reichert, I'm an intern from California, working in Washington, D.C. I had a question. What effect, if any, do you think the vigilantes will play along the border on stopping either immigration or swaying border states' opinions on immigration?
I'll take a crack at it, and then others may join. I think what the vigilantes show is what we know, what Ed underlined very effectively. People are upset about this. People are upset about the illegality. I don't think the vigilantes necessarily represent the American public, but they do represent that concern about the illegality. They're saying the system is broken. Well, you know, and they say they want to send a message to Washington that the system is broken. I think we all get that the system is broken. The question is, how do you fix it? And I think President Bush may have the best answer for them, better than some of the Congress who they think have an answer for them.
If you set the speed limit at 25 miles an hour, everybody speeds. And then you say, hey, people are speeding. If you create millions of jobs in the United States, and then you have an immigration policy that says you can't have people come across the border to get those jobs, they will too. And you can either have laws that make it easy and rational for people to come to the United States legally and fill out the paperwork and be identified as to who they are and come with the set rules about what their status is going to be and how long they're staying and whether they're on track to for citizenship or not and what their rights about bringing family members in or out are. And if you do that, then the border becomes a rational place. We didn't have people jumping across the border back when we had the Braceros program or things like that where you could, where there were legal ways to come here and work. If you say we've created several million jobs and it's illegal to come here, then everybody who shows up is illegal. And you don't know who they are and you don't know where they live and they can't go back and forth to visit family, so they're separated from their family because they can't go back for holidays and whatnot. And that's never good for people. So I think that, the mess at the border is an argument for a rational, reasonable immigration policy that makes sense for the number of jobs we have and the number of immigrants that we do need in this country, and to rationalize our security, legitimate security concerns that Americans have.
Please.
Hi, my name is Leilani with House Judiciary. My question is about the poll. As Ms. Jacoby mentioned, this poll kind of has different results than what we've been seeing. To what can you attribute that change or that difference?
I'd like to think it's because we did a better job of kind of cleaning up the questions. Look at the questionnaire. I think what you'll find is that, and we actually see this more on the Republican side with pollsters. I mean, we are very clear of wanting to ask very clean questions and then analyzing what the result is rather than asking other type questions. I'm very critical and have always been very critical. In fact, it's one of the things that started our doing the battleground survey back in 1991. Of many of these media polls that ask the popular question of the day that is just loaded in terms of the question. All we did in this case is we said, here is each part of the proposal. Do you approve or disapprove? And then we looked at individually, do you approve of these sections? And then we asked at the end, which is also a very interesting question, now that you said you support it or you don't support it, what was the thing you heard that made you want to support it or not support it? As opposed to these questions that you see out there that everyone's kind of loading it in the beginning and then saying this is what it means. The other thing is that Celinda and I have been doing immigration polling for over a decade now. And one of the things on polling, again going back to the questions of the day on polling, is that part of what you learn in polling is you have to ask the same question the same way in the same order. Because not only does how you pull the sample affect your survey, but how you ask the question affects the survey and question order affects the survey. And so when you ask a question for the first time, you never know what you're really getting because there's always nuances of the response. And so we're very careful on that. Now, some of the other questions in there, the only other possible answer would be is very often they're merging it in with questions on other things. And so if you get a question that is a series of questions that are focusing on, for example, the war in Iraq, and then you come and ask immigration questions, you're going to get a different type of response than if you ask a bunch of questions on education and then come back and ask some immigration questions, or the economy and come back and ask some immigration questions. So this was a pure survey from the standpoint of very clean, very concise questions, and in an order that you weren't doing any of the informational message questions until after you looked at a clean look at the proposal.
And the other thing I would add to that answer is I would point back to the way the debate has changed on what I started with about President Bush and what the proposal that was being tested was a proposal that didn't say, do you want to open or shut? Do you want high or low? It said, we can have immigration and legality and control and enforcement and penalties and security too. And people like that combination. Americans aren't anti-immigrant. They don't want to put a wall around the country, but they do want legality and enforcement. And it's the package, I think, that's popular in a new way. I mean, due respect to the poll, but it's I think it's there's a proposal out there now.
Hi, Cesar Gonzalez from Congressman Lincoln Diaz-Blard's office. I want to know if in the poll, did it at all gauge Americans' understanding of just how vital a part undocumented workers are now playing in the economy in certain vital sectors, such as agriculture and other areas?
We did get into that. We certainly got into, if you remember, the list I went through at the beginning, which we kind of call the values, which was later on in the survey. But, you know, clearly, and we've seen this in the focus groups, I mean, if you start getting into a discussion about immigration or immigrants, and you listen to the discussion going on, it's all about illegal immigrants or undocumented workers. It's not about legal immigrants. And it's a very interesting kind of conversation to listen to. So when you go through these qualities and you're having a majority saying that the immigrants are illegal, but you're also saying that they're hardworking, that they're taking jobs that Americans that don't want, they share our values. I mean, those are very, very important things that are there. I mean, part of it, Michael Barone has written, I think, some of the best on the immigration issue today in terms of the reality of our ancestors who were immigrants like the immigrants of today and what is reality and what's not. I think he touches on probably some pretty good information there that part of what has been dealt with in recent years is they're not seen the same. I mean, people are surprised when I tell people that my grandparents and my great-grandparents were migrant farm workers who went from Spain and Portugal to work in Hawaii. I'm an American now. And so they don't kind of connect that with the immigrants of today, even though it's much of the same Spanish heritage that you see from some of the Hispanics that are out there. So I think part of it is there is an attribution of those values, but there's also the negatives that are there too, and that's where the contradictory information is.
Please. Mario Lopez, I'm with the Congressional Hispanic Conference, and for those who don't know, it's 17 Hispanic and non-Hispanic Republican members who are working together. Two questions. Where can we get more information on labor shortage statistics? And secondly, on the politics of the issue, how do we get some of the folks, some of our own, to sort of, at a bare minimum, kind of dial down the rhetoric, at least, at a bare minimum that would help the politics of the situation?
We can get you the first. Good luck on the second.
Yeah, exactly. You want to speak to the labor?
Let's do, yeah.
Labor shortage numbers, which are sometimes notoriously hard to get. You can go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics website, I believe that's BLS.gov, and they have 10-year projections for labor force needs. It won't give you shortages. They don't do that, but they talk about different sectors and how many hundreds of thousands or even millions of jobs will be needed in those sectors over the next 10 years. And then you can do your own math on how the U.S. population is at replacement level right now and not producing enough people, and the gap to meet that will have to be filled by immigrant workers.
The other thing on numbers is to look at the help wanted ads and talk to people who run restaurants and construction industry people to see those numbers. On how to get people to dial down the rhetoric, there are some people who are well known to the C-SPAN audience because they get on television and whine about immigration. Ask them how their careers are going. When the Senate seat opened up in the state of the most prominent one and he polled to find out whether he might be considered for promotion, did he discover that this was not a popular way to promote yourself for higher office? He's not in the Senate now, and he wasn't able to run in the primary. And other folks who've done that, how's President Pat Buchanan doing? I think the best way to suggest to folks who think that this is a way to advance themselves, other than to show up on Hispanic TV a lot as the bad guy in the black hat, it is not a successful route to political success. And at the end of the day, I think that's the best antidote. I mean, there's no point in calling them names. That just makes them feel good. Other than loser and unpromotable. I think to just gently remind them that the other kids are moving from fourth grade to fifth grade and they're staying back.
By the way, I'd be glad to come into the caucus and go over the survey information if you'd like.
Let me just add a couple things on that. The Cato Institute has a very good study called Willing Workers by Dan Griswold, and he does some of the comparison that John just suggested you do, where he takes some of the BLS numbers and compares them to needs. Dan Griswold, Cato Institute, I think it's called Willing Workers, and it's a very good paper. One other thing on the politics, you know, I like to say the Republican Party is split 25-25-50 on this. There's 25% that's kind of with us. There's 25% that's over my dead body. Thank you so much, Ed. There's 25% that's with us, 25% that's over my dead body, and about 50% in the middle, not quite sure what they think, worried about their constituents, that kind of thing. I think if those people started to, start to talk about it and see what they think and come out for us, the 25% would be marginalized, as I think it is. So, you know, rather than keeping them quiet, let's, you know, get the center with the program. And I think, you know, that's partly what we're trying to do with these briefings. One more question. I think we have time for one more question. How are we doing? One more. Wait, why don't you wait till the microphone shows up?
Yeah, Al Milliken again. I kind of wanted to ask Ed, in the survey, I was wondering if there were specific ways you could break down in areas that, say, where there are many Spanish-speaking immigrants that are affecting the school system, that are affecting just, you know, ordinary business life in the community, where, you know, Spanish may need to be spoken now where, you know, there was English only in the past. And then I was particularly with the war on terrorism going on, how were people responding to specifically Muslim or Arab immigrants? And I know when countries like Cuba and Saudi Arabia in the past have been given favorable treatment for immigration, is that anything you dealt with in the survey?
It's way too small to deal with. We have dealt with it in the past in focus groups. All I will say in the Hispanic, that is something a lot of people don't realize, we now have 30 states in this country that has a larger Hispanic community than African-American community. I mean, it is huge. It is not just two or three states anymore. It is the majority of the country. And I think that's why we did the oversample on Hispanics rather than focusing on some of these other smaller groups, because that is the bulk of the impression that is out there right now with the voters. Thanks.
Ed's dashing to catch a plane. That's why he's rushing out. Thank you all very much. This is the first of a series. There will be more. Thanks for coming. Thanks to our panelists.